Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast presented by MyBookie.ag. We sound a lot happier today than we did last week. We being myself, Joe Kuzma, and my co-host, Brian E. Roach. Brian E., what's going on, my friend?
It's vindication, baby. That's what it is.
Oh, my goodness. This team, I don't know if they found their identity or if they found Hyde instead of Jekyll or Jekyll instead of Hyde or whatever's going on. But you know what? We usually talk about MyBookie in the middle of the show per our agreement with MyBookie.ag. But if you didn't use the promo code SteelCity this week and got 100% bonus money and went and doubled that up, taking the 4 or 4.5 points of which it fluctuated around, we told you so. That's all I could say, right, Brian?
Absolutely.
Didn't get to 44. This game only 32 points total with the league's top offense and projected going into the season one of the league's top offenses in the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I must this isn't a good shout out for you, Tommy Jaggy, but man, do you have to be a Debbie Downer 5 minutes after the game's over? He says without the fluke touchdown, which, you know what, that's football. There's a lot of flukes. We've seen Tyler Lockett maybe with the Seahawks in the Super Bowl and Julian Edelman with the Falcons. You know, flukes make the world go round, and Antonio Brown is not human. He makes flukes seem normal, seem like everyday occurrences, seem like Tony Romo talking about Le'Veon Bell being like a Madden video game. And Bell was much like a video game. The Steelers were committed to running the football today. 32 attempts, 179 yards, one touchdown. His long was 27 yards. He had very many other longs, and he had one that was just an insane run that was called back on. I don't know, the camera angle maybe didn't do the whole justice, but I've seen far greater crimes occur on the football field. I don't know, Brian. I had a lot of anxiety watching this one on Sunday. I'm sure you did as well. I'm surprised. We must have good cardiovascular conditioning or something. Our hearts are still intact. Our minds took a beating a few times already this season, but I think they're almost there. And I mean, the defense is just unreal right now. There are points where they're unreal in bad ways, but mostly good on Sunday.
Yeah, you really got a chance to see how good this defense can be in the first half of that game. I mean, they could not have played a better first half. The Chiefs got one first down in the entire first half, and that wasn't until, you know, there was, what, like 2-3 minutes left in the half. It was an incredibly dominating performance. And as you said with Tommy Jaggy, the funny thing was everybody was complaining that we weren't further ahead. And I understand when you talk about some of the ridiculous comparisons to the stats, the Steelers had the ball for, I don't know, 20-something minutes in the first half, and the Chiefs had it for 8. And the first downs were way out of whack, 16-1, something like that. And then it's like, but it's only 12-3. Well, I get it. You know, but the best it was going to be was 16-3. They really only had 2 drives. It's just that those 2 drives ate up so much time, and they were so dominant and had such a ball possession to keep Kansas City off the field. It was just awesome to behold. Everything was clicking in that first half.
It was, and I made a number of comments, not only to you guys as we talk and chatter offline, and you know, a lot of our swearing and frustration that most of the listeners or readers don't get to see out on the site. There's some things that go on. We get upset too, and we definitely were thinking. I was talking with my cousin, but mostly my main cousin, my main man, Brad. Sorry, Michael, you just didn't conversate a whole lot today, but I told him, there were a few things that really stood out to me, and I think the one I came away after this game, and he was talking about the defense was dominant, maybe they're coming back. I always thought the pass defense, I'm like, really, is this a top pass defense? They played some horrible quarterbacks who haven't been taking any shots. I think they just shut everything down today. I think Mike Hilton is a game changer. Once again, I love the Mike Hilton DB blitz. It creates chaos for quarterbacks. It disrupts them. He had a nice stop for maybe a tackle for loss or no gain on one of these little short, quick screen pass. I mean, and he had the one, was it Hunt? I'm trying to think who got the ball. Maybe it was even Hill. And it was like almost like Ryan Shazier-like how far back he got the little ankle tackle. And you're just so accustomed to seeing these being missed. But I'll tell you the name, Brian, that we have not heard anything from this season, but we heard a lot about before the season started, and that was a free agent acquisition in Joe Haden. There has been silence. Silence. Do you see Joe Haden getting challenged at all by any of these teams that they've played so far? I have not. If this were Ross Cockrell out there like last year, I think maybe you see a little bit more activity, and then therefore they had to challenge Artie Burns, who for maybe three quarters looked very solid, had his head on a swivel for a couple plays too. The pass defense might, I'm going to say this still, there's an asterisk here, but it might be for real.
It sure looks that way, and you bring up a good point about Joe Haden. Joe Haden has been persona non grata in the sense of nobody's talking about Joe Haden. Nobody's talking about him in a negative way. And that's the best compliment you can give a cornerback. We have nothing to say about him because teams aren't throwing at him. And when they do throw at him, he's making some good plays. If they make a reception, he's right there to hit the tackle. That was the case, I think, once or twice in this game. He's defending some passes. It's the pass defense looks really good, other than, you know, a couple plays in the second half. I mean, they did manage to give up 246 yards to Alex Smith, which is, you know, that's quite a bit of yardage. It's much higher than their average of giving up, you know, yards in the air. But, you know, it really came on a couple of chunk plays. I mean, they had Travis Kelce had all, you know, no catches through like three quarters. And then his first catch was for minus yards because he got blown up when he caught the ball. And I think that was Mike Hilton, too, by the way. In on that screen to Kelce blowing that thing up. Mike Hilton has definitely come to play.
6 yards in the first half. 6 yards was what it was. And just to back you up on that, Kansas City was averaging 258 pass yards per game, which was good for ninth in the league heading into Sunday's game. And you know what? That's top 10. What else can you say about that? And you gave up about the same average or so. They were second in rushing, 156 yards. Now, I made some bold predictions before this game. Let's see where this turned out as I pull up the official stats. Oh, that's such a good one. I don't even think I was that bold, to be honest. I was talking a few, just a few. Oh, you know what? It's a crystal ball, and you're really like throwing darts at a board, and it's like your wish list. I said two receivers top 100. I thought Bell would be the second one based on how many times he was targeted against the Jaguars a week earlier. Antonio Brown was the other big one, I thought. I thought in doing so, too, that Ben would top 400 yards. I thought Bell would top 200 total, and he was pretty close. He was over 180 with, I think he had three catches for like a dozen yards.
12 yards,
Steelers, I said, would win by two scores, maybe. That didn't quite happen. It should have happened, but we could get to that in a second. I said this was my bold prediction here, was Kareem Hunt shutdown. I said KC didn't have the most success running the ball against the Steelers last season. I believe Hunt's a product of the Andy Reid system, Brian Westbrook, Spencer Ware, etc. What would be a good figure here? I'd like the Steelers to hold Hunt to 80 or less on the ground and no scores. So do we want to know where Hunt exactly ended up? He had nine carries for 21 yards. He had six targets, five receptions for 89. So, and that was that 37 yard big chunk that you were talking about. He did not score. So he got a little over 100, but I was pretty close. But they shut him down on the ground. I mean, I didn't think they were going to run the ball very well. I don't think that they did. I want to throw one other thing out there as we're going to be jumping around all over the place, just still on defense. There were two things here. One was somebody was talking about, is Bud Dupree the new Jarvis Jones? And I nearly like jumped into the internet and punched someone in the face. No, no, he is not. I'm sorry he doesn't get a sack on every play. I'm sorry TJ Watt doesn't either. Sorry, not sorry. And Terry's dancing around in Southern California somewhere right now, putting James Harrison in on the final series there. He got a few snaps, maybe about a dozen or so. He was in for two or three series, including the one of those big plays. They had four guys out. They subbed two of the D linemen, and I think Dupree was out for Chickalo, and Harrison came in for Watt, and that was one of the big plays there, having the backups in, and Tomlin sent him right back out. I think that's courtesy of Jerry Dulac, who pointed that out, because I noticed the outside linebacker rotation, which was one of the weird things, was I hope Vince Williams is okay. They were able to get this done with some pieces, parts, offensive linemen especially. Gilbert went back out, Hubbard was in, Finney was in for Foster, a big, big thing that, you know, we didn't see coming when we did our preview podcast, because Ramon Foster wasn't on the injury report yet. He ends up on the injury report out of nowhere, out of Sunday's game. He's the guy who does the silent snap count on offense, so that's a big one too. But here's the oddball one. If any of you are film buffs and go back, three outside linebackers, they put Bud Dupree in for Vince Williams. I don't know if it was a bad substitution or if it was intentional. I thought I saw it for at least two plays. They had James Harrison playing on the left, which is out of position for him. He's usually on the right. We've seen TJ both sides. We had discussed whether or not Harrison would maybe sub for Dupree at some point, if they would take Watt off the field, et cetera, et cetera. But they actually had Shazier out there with Dupree in the middle, and then Harrison and Watt as your outside linebackers. Now, of course, Dupree, I think, blitzed on that play, but I think on the second one he went in and dropped into coverage, and then they eventually brought Tyler Matakevich out there, which was hilarious to maybe not so funny. I don't like poking fun at guys, but I think Tyler knows he's not Ryan Shazier fast, and they sent him through the middle on a blitz, and it was just like you're watching it in slow motion, like this isn't going to happen, and it didn't happen. But I still love him. No. I still love Dirty Red. I love the defense on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, look, that even though he doesn't get to Alex Smith, what he does is force Alex Smith to run out of the pocket and throw the ball away. And that is perfectly acceptable as an outcome for that play. They did that more than once. I mean, Alex Smith gets sacked quite often, but really it's surprising how often he gets taken down, because he's very mobile as a quarterback, and he does tend to move around a lot. And he did this several times during this game. I mean, we got to him three times. Vince Williams had two, and Debo came in and represented at the end of the game with that huge sack in the fourth quarter.
Won the game.
But, yeah, absolutely.
Again.
But it's, you know, even without that, the pressure, especially the pressure coming up the middle, was just outrageous. Cam Hayward, at one point, knocked whoever was blocking him, which is one of the guards, right in to whatever his name is. Now I'm too excited. I can't even remember who the stupid quarterback is. Alex Smith.
Most people don't know. That's why they drafted a rookie this year.
Yeah, Alex Smith. I mean, literally knocked the helmet of the guard into Alex Smith's helmet. So I was waiting for a helmet-to-helmet penalty for Kansas City against Kansas City. But that didn't quite happen. But, I mean, it was just unreal, the amount of pressure they were getting up the middle. You know, it was a dominating performance until that second half, when they kind of – I felt like they took their foot off the pedal. I felt like they started playing a little safer, trying to be more zone prevent, not being nearly as aggressive. And it didn't work as well.
You could tell that was happening because Will Gay was out there. They were basically playing a dime package. They had Gay kind of – it wasn't a man type thing, but he was mostly out there tracking Travis Kelce for the most part. I think Hilton got crossed up on one of those, or Sean Davis on one of those, and even Romo made the comment. Romo was gold, by the way. We're going to talk about the offense here in a second, but I pointed out immediately, people were already on the Roethlisberger, like, washed up terrible thing with the interception that he threw, and I'm like, that looked like it was Antonio Brown's fault. And it cuts a commercial, and they came back, and then they were saying that, and I'd already texted this out and everything, and I'm like, what are you guys talking about? Blah, 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 blah. And Tony Romo, thank you for vindicating me, by the way. So
absolutely. But I blew that on the first one, too. I tweeted out immediately when I saw it because I did not see AB in the frame. I said, well, that one's on Ben, and everybody jumped on me, and I had to admit I was wrong, and I was, because when they came back and I got a chance to see it again, it was clear AB was supposed to do something else.
It was your dude today, though, that had one heck of a game, also silent by statistic-wise, saying it, but Stefan to it, man.
Man.
We were saying we had the Schwarzenegger impersonation. I won't go there again, but, man, did we called that one. I think that was a pretty good one on our part. So,
yep.
Before I get to – well, you know what? Let's just jump over to offense, because offense jumps to special teams in my mind today, too, or not today, but yesterday. It's still lack of sleep. We're not quite as loopy. We are loopy from a high from a win, and we have lots of good stuff to talk about. But I thought the offense, even though they didn't score points, they at least helped field position by maintaining the ball, maintaining possession, controlling the clock, getting some chunks, and allowing Jordan Berry to do his job when they did not convert on third down. Jordan Berry had a heck of a game for the most part. I was still a little concerned up until that fourth quarter with the punt return that looked like it was going to be amazing. And then Romo, once again, he's cracked me up. Better than Phil Sims, not as much of a homer. He said that Hill ran like 100 yards on that one. And then, of course, they cracked Hill and took him out of the game. And, you know, that's just one of the unfortunate things that happen when you got all these moving pieces and parts. So the other thing I wanted to mention, speaking of which, because they hit, I'm sure somebody will say that's a dirty hit. Wouldn't be surprised if there was some sort of BS fine, just because Hill is such a dynamic player and considered a star maybe at this point of his NFL career. But Mike Mitchell going low, I thought Mike Mitchell, they missed so much on that sack. There were three guys there. I think Tuitt was one of them. Maybe Shazier. I thought Shazier got grabbed by the face mask on the play, but I'm only going by memory here. And, of course, I'm very, very biased. Someone called me a homer. Someone dug up some article I wrote last year comparing Mitchell and Vontaze Burfict as far as dirty plays and dirty hits. But I thought Mitchell was still just trying to make the sack, and he's coming from behind. And, of course, when you hit somebody from behind or a defenseless player, I get it. Is it necessarily dirty? I thought it was just part of the game. And I told the person, of course, I was like, in the comments, I said, hey, sorry, my DeLorean was broken in December of 2016. I couldn't write about a play that happened in October of 2017. So those are the type of trolls that end up coming from whatever bridge they come out of to talk about dirty plays and stuff. So I'll seal the deal on the defense there. Let's talk about offense, Brian. I thought a little bit better. First half, I thought Vance McDonald had himself a game, but this was the Le'Veon Bell show.
You know, I think Le'Veon looks like the Le'Veon we were expecting. I mean, this is the kind of game he had against them in the playoffs, and we all talked about how this needed to be the focus of the offense. In order for this offense to get grounded, to get in sync, they need to play off of the run. They need to have a strong running game, and that helps the passing game, and that's what we saw today. Especially, I mean, if you can do what they did in those first two drives, which is essentially run the ball, eat the clock, and deny the opposition the ball, I mean, that's you're going to win most of those games.
I agree wholeheartedly, and you have to laugh at Ben Roethlisberger teasing the media once again. I forgot what they asked in his press conference, and he said something like, I don't know, this whole old cowboy still has something left or something like that.
Yeah.
He's such a nut. He knows it was one bad game. I love it. This is the other thing, man. Like I said, I was excited to hear what Tony Romo would be like, because for years I've been rolling my eyes that every time Phil Sims would say something, it was always a comparison to Tom Brady. Tom Brady would have done this. Tom Brady would have done that. Tom Brady, Tom Brady, Tom Brady, Tom Brady. It was like, dude, do you have like a switch or a dial? Can you go somewhere else with this? So Romo, of course, saying, you know, I don't put a whole lot of stock into that with the stats. It's still early in the season, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, wow, you know, that's a fresh breath of air. I honestly didn't think Tony Romo would be worth a flip as a color commentary guy. And I actually find myself not wanting to mute the TV for the the first time in many, many years. So this was good. So not to steal any Terry's thunder either. I think there'll be plenty of WTF coming, especially with that New England Patriots New York Jets game, because oh man,
don't get me started on that one.
So I think he even had something to say about that. And then of course he couldn't pronounce Jim Nance couldn't pronounce Juju Smith-Schuster, which we trip over and get tongue-tied on quite a bit ourselves. And Tony Romo throws out a Dumb and Dumber reference of, you know, he didn't go the full the route of it, but the slippy slappy simmy swimmy, look on the briefcase, oh Samsonite, I was way off. And he said like the Swanson part of it and the Samsonite part of it, he got it a little butchered, but we know what you were looking for, Tony. I know you're not listening to this because you're part of the we're part of the Cowboys organization. We don't like the Cowboys anyway, so just slightly more than the Patriots, I think. But anyways,
yeah, there's one thing I have to give him props for this as well. In the second half, when Marcus Gilbert had been out of the game since early in the game, right? And in the second half, Romo is talking about Bell and his performance, and he says, you know, oh, but it's great because Marcus Gilbert is in back, and Hubbard has been in the game for a quarter plus at that point. But he caught himself, and he goes, and I've just been informed that Marcus Gilbert has been removed from the game.
he flopped on that, too. He's like, you're going to see Le'Veon Bell throw a block here, and Bell just ran through the middle, like right outside one of the gaps on the side of Pouncey. And it was just Pouncey who totally owned whoever he was. He put a hat on, and Bell kind of just released and turned back for an outlet there. And he's like, well, I stand corrected. Bell didn't block anyone. It was the center, and he totally took whoever out of the play. So, hey, I was happy, though. They finally called one of these, like, block-in-the-back penalties with William Gay. And he got totally, like, lit up. It would have been a first down. Alex Smith kind of scampered around and as he was doing, and that set them back, a third down, and set them back. And I was just happy because I thought there was, like, something very similar earlier in the game. And, of course, I'm going to think there's something on every play. In fact, James Harrison, I thought, got mugged on one of his few snaps, too. Yep. Early on, as we always feel. And, you know, the only one that was really the oddball, and this is covered in the You Make the Call article. Once again, this is the third week in a row now where we're trying to figure out, is it an interception, a fumble, or whatever? So we had the thing with Antonio Brown with the Ravens, and he gets flipped over, and you think his knee's down, and they're saying he's not a runner, and he didn't complete the catch, but the ball didn't hit the ground, so it's an interception for Eric Weddle. Okay, whatever. Then against the Jaguars last week, Ryan Shazier basically strips their tight end, O'Shaughnessy. Is it James O'Shaughnessy? I think. I can't remember his first name. But he basically strips him. But since he had his back turned and didn't really make a football move, it's not considered a completed catch either. But the ball, once again, doesn't hit the ground. Interception for Ryan Shazier, who almost came up with another one late in this same game. So this week we have, I think, DeAnthony Thomas going up against Sean Davis, and Sean Davis ends up on his back on the ground with the ball in his chest, clearly possessed, and then all of a sudden it gets ripped out and it's an incomplete pass. So there wasn't a whole lot of replay to watch of that, and it just no one examined it, no one really showed it, and to me I was just like, this is like the same thing. Like, this is beyond deja vu. Is there like a deja thrice or something like that? Because either way, it didn't matter because it was fourth down and it turned over on down. So it didn't affect the game in any manner. But to me, it was just like, well, the only thing it did affect maybe was field position, because the Steelers would have gotten the ball out on with a touchback there, would have been 20 or the 25 on an interception. I think it's only 25 on kickoffs. So, because on a punt still, if it goes through, it's still only over to the 20. Yep. So probably the 20, but still, you know what, almost 10 yards or so, because they were pretty far back there or whatever. They would have gotten a few yards out of it, and that may have made a little bit of a difference, but I can't figure out what a catch or an interception is anymore.
It's like, I don't want to get started because I don't want to steal Terry's thunder on the Austin Seferian Jenkins overruled TD in the Jets game. But if that's not a catch for a touchdown, what in the world is? It's the most absurd thing. And the fact that they called it a fumble when the ball never really leaves his possession, it never hits the ground, it never leaves his arms. But, oh, it was a fumble out of bounds, therefore the Patriots get the ball. Give me a break. On top of that, the other thing that happened in this game is, you know, one of the drives when they had to kick the field goal, Bell is clearly held I mean, everybody could see it. The linebacker, I think it was Dee Ford, obviously holds Bell, spins him around. The ref is right there, but no flag comes out. I hate to keep saying this, but I don't hate to keep saying it. The refs stink. They stink. They stink. They stink.
I was, you know what? I'm trying to remember who that was too. Was it Derek Johnson? Maybe. Maybe it was. I'm trying to remember.
It might have been Derek Johnson.
So he got held around the waist, and this, and the players know it. If you're a veteran, you've been playing this for many years. You have college. You have high school. You know the referees are over by the sidelines. The guys in the middle of the field aren't necessarily got their eyes, especially in such a closed. You get tunnel vision because you don't have a wide peripheral vision there because you're standing like basically your guy that's on the back of the goal line is standing right there as people come closer. Anyone to your left and right out so many yards are going to be out of your vision. It's just a tunnel vision thing, and they're watching what's going on down the center of the field. Anyways, everyone has their responsibilities, right? So you get the guys that like your side judge, line judge, whoever's on the sideline there, and they can't see it because it happens towards the inside of the field and not the outside of the field, and the only thing they could do is really smell if something happened, and it is. It's bad. It sucks. And it also sucks that Antonio Brown was open on the other side. I like how Tony Romo defended that too. This is turning into the Tony Romo love show, the love connection here for Mr. Romo. But I thought he had some very good observations that are very much in line with what you and I talk about all the time. And finally, you know, there's still people, there's still the Yinzers out there that aren't happy with this victory. This is a very big win. This was an undefeated Kansas City Chiefs team. This is a team that the Steelers team that people criticize and say can't win on the road. Yet they did. Against a 5-0 team, AFC conference victory, a team more than likely the Chiefs will be in contention for a playoff position. Tiebreaker big. Ravens win, big tiebreaker within the division. This one, a tiebreaker within the conference. They really do control their own destiny. They have New England later looking way down the road if things continue and are good. And let's say they're both within a game of each other or whatever. A win over New England could give them a home field advantage because they've now beaten the Chiefs too. And that's just considering maybe that the Chiefs don't implode, the Raiders don't end up being like super awesome or something, and there's a lot of football left. We're just in the second quarter now, week six. But just in the grand scheme of things, a win is a win is a win. Don't care how good or ugly or whatever it was. This was what needed to happen. And, you know, it still blows my mind because you can't figure out anything that's going on from week to week because, what was it, the Bears beat the Ravens. And then you've got Jacksonville, I think, dropping to the Rams. So, yep. I mean, you just
– And the Raiders dropped to the Chargers.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So you think fan bases are freaking out there? What do you think Packers fans are feeling right now if Aaron Rodgers is out with a broken collarbone? So we're going to segue into Terry's WTF here. We're going to leave you off for today. We're going to get to that here in the coming day or two whenever she is free. We had like some we skipped a beat on the schedule last week, but you know what, that happens sometimes. We're all busy people. So speaking of which, Brian, it's been fun talking to you, but we got to leave some to talk about later this week. So big win, here we go.
Huge win.
Huge.
Huge.
Yes. Yes. Very big.
Huge. Bigly. It's bigly.
Yeah. So I'm leaving it there. We're going to get loopy again. That's Brian. He's laughing. I'm also chuckling over here. My name's Joe. Folks, go ahead. Hate mail. We love and love mail. Love mail's good too. Fan mail at steelcityunderground.com. And we haven't really pitched this on the show, but we've been trying to highlight some fan clubs. We come out and see if we can because, you know, we don't have an unlimited budget to fly around the world. But send those over because we did one on the, what was it, Southeastern Pennsylvania Steelers fan
Steelers
club.
Fans. Yep.
Yep.
You were great with group. Them. Great group.
You were with them last week. I'm going to eventually catch up with my friends, the Steeler gang, at some point here. And there's also a big Ray Seals tailgate going on less than a week. I was going to say a week from Sunday, but we're already headed back home at Heinz Field next Sunday against the Bengals. So Ray Seals got a big thing going on there too. They both have minimal charges, but folks, if you don't want to like throw everything in the car and you just want to kind of show up, eat, drink, and you get to hang out with some players if they're there too, former players. So check out either one of those guys, and we're going to probably hang out with one of them here in the near future. Ray's just a one-time deal once a year, but Steeler Gang guys are always partying everywhere. So they were in your neck of the woods in New Jersey. We couldn't hook up with them for the KC game, but rambling on. But you know what? Not everyone gets to read the stuff on the website or, you know, social media if you're busy and you miss the post. We're telling you about it here. You can nominate. What is the email that we have for that? Is it fan club?
Fan mail
at steelcityunderground.com. And just nominate if you have a group. And we're just kind of collecting some contact information. If we could hook up with you this season or maybe in the near future, we will. So go ahead and do that. You can also text us 203-900-4SCU. So until next time, be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.